This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Electromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts about some of the IT trends and challenges facing agencies and industry. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we are lucky enough to have Doug Brashear. He is the Associate Director for User Experience at a company called HZDG. Now, these are acronyms that you normally don't hear on this radio station, Federal News Radio. We talk about the CIA and the FBI and all kinds of acronyms, but not about these. Today, we're going to switch hats, and we're going to talk about the user experience with handheld devices, user experience with a desktop, user experience with a tablet, and how our information professionals and federal agencies can benefit from knowing some of the basic terms. What is the difference between responsive design? What about apps? When to use an app? When to use responsive design? How much does it cost? And I think any agency that has to interact with citizens, and most of them do, have to have a basic understanding of that. And so that's why we have Doug Brashear in the studio today. Doug has lectured at Georgetown University and dazzled audiences over there. But before we begin, Doug, tell us about your background, how you wound up working for HZDG.
I've been in this area for about 18 or 20 years now, and worked in a number of different agencies, working on refining the user experience through digital interfaces, you know, making them successful.
Now, when Doug says agencies, he means advertising agencies.
Exactly.
Okay, go on, Doug. I'm sorry.
So making them enable user success, user satisfaction to the greatest extent possible, helping people do what they need to do through the digital interface and, you know, ideally making it something that they recommend to their friends to build traffic and customer loyalty.
And believe it or not, there are my type of federal agencies like the IRS. And guess what? They have customers and users, and they're trying to make sure they have a good user experience as well. I mean, most agencies do. Healthcare, I mean, I was going to a long, long list of agencies that have outward-facing websites, and some have inward-facing websites, and they have to respond to the needs of the people who use them, which could be citizens, it could be other govies, it could be policemen, it could be Marines, the U.S. Marine Corps having tablet devices, and they have to understand a little bit about responsive design and mobile considerations before they begin. So been in the area a while, worked with a lot of projects involving mobile. Is that right, Doug?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, definitely. I think one thing we're seeing with this, with the current mobile adoption, mobile usage trends, is that mobile is more important than ever before. It's important for all projects to take mobile into account from the very beginning, because trying to add it in at a later date can have a much higher cost multiplier to it. And I think what we're seeing is that, you know, a lot of people are using certain types of mobile devices, you know, smartphones and tablets in very focused ways throughout the day. Certain times smartphone heavy, other later in the evening, more tablet heavy. But these are things that people are using, they're choosing to use, they're opting for them instead of desktops and laptops. And so, you know, if you're not designing or optimizing your experiences for these devices, you're missing the boat.
About a month ago, Dan Zarella published a State of Email Marketing 2014. I don't know if you saw it or not, but exactly what he said. They looked at 500 million emails, and they said, well, how do people read these things? When do they read them? What tracks their attention and not? And this is what happens. In the morning, generally speaking, people may use a smartphone, and at work they may use a desktop, and in the evenings they may use a tablet. Mm-hmm. And so if you're trying to appeal to an audience, you have to understand, well, these are three different audiences, and how can you adapt your design to impact them the most?
Exactly. I mean, one thing we're also seeing is that, and I think it was probably part of that report, was that you know, a lot of agencies, a lot of companies, you know, they're building email address lists, they're sending out communications via email. And one thing that we're seeing is that more and more people are trying to read these things or opening, you know, their email messages on their mobile devices, particularly smartphones. And when they open that message, if they have to pinch and zoom to magnify the message, you know, horizontally scroll it left and right to read the text, that's not going to be an ideal experience. We're seeing that the way to be successful with email newsletters or communications these days is to make those communications responsively designed so that regardless of the device that people open them on, they are, you know, visually optimized, not only for the screen size, but also maybe for the capabilities of the device. So, you know, perhaps you're showing a slightly different set of content, you know, when the user opens it on a small device.
Now, let's say you're working for an agency that has to be in contact with border agents or people in the Bureau of Land Management. And how do you send out an email that is effective? And if you read the study, The Science of Email 2014, Don Zarrell, I mentioned earlier, 47% of emails open on a mobile device. And so why not consider putting together messages that are responsive? Mm-hmm. And what kind of tools would you use to do that anyway?
I mean, I think it's, you know, I would hesitate to speak in a technical fashion just because that's I have great people I get to rely on every day to help me through those particulars. But I think another really important factor is, well, to answer your question, it would be through the same web code, the same email construction that you would normally do. It's just that you're taking an additional set of factors into account. And I think the other important thing to keep in mind is that, you know, that email message, it may be intending to communicate something, but you may also be trying to get someone to do something. You know, maybe it's putting a call to action in front of the user that you want them to tap on in order to convert, purchase something, read something, download something. And so you want to be sure that the experience you're linking to from that email message is also mobile optimized. You know, basically if they're on mobile and you're trying to cater to them in mobile, you want to show them a mobile experience.
Would the usual suspects like Constant Contact, MailChimp, would they provide email that is responsive?
Without having specific knowledge of it, I can almost guarantee that the answer is yes.
Yeah, I would think so. If they send millions of these, they have to go to, you know, email 101 and realize that, you know, maybe 4 or 5 years ago this wasn't a question, but today it's a question you really have to ask. I mean, yep. If you're responsible for notifying 5,000 people, how do you make sure that your click rate's there, the open rate is real high? Well, the obvious way is through some kind of responsive design for the email itself.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I mean, right now, you know, email, I think the focus on email is that people are still using it. You know, I think several years ago, there was this thought that email might just go away, you know, in favor of instant messaging and other types of, you know, more direct communication. I think that's not exactly the case. And we've found that out in recent years. And so a lot of these email marketing companies are realizing that they have to be able to optimize for the devices that are out there because, you know, the service is still relevant. People are still using them, and in some cases more than ever before. And so, you know, they just need to move with the times.
Your company website is hzdg.com, and I was here this morning. And a lot of focus there on the end experience, the users. Mm-hmm. And they like to sit down with users and sit down, have a cup of coffee and say, okay, how do you use this? What do you want? How do you want it? And they go back and they try to design websites that appeal to that specific person. I think it's user-focused. And I think that's where many of the listeners of this broadcast should start with, okay, so what kind of device is – so if – 62% of your newsletter subscriber list is on Apple iOS, maybe you should take advantage of it and optimize that for Apple iOS. So this optimization is a whole new world with mobile.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think that, you know, these days, you know, there are turning out to be some clear winners in the device sort of ecosystem. I think that, you know, several years ago there was an, you know, Windows Phone was a contender. There were BlackBerry was a contender. There were differentiated flavors of Android that seemed to be moving forward. I think these days what we're seeing is that, you know, iOS and some of the more standard flavors of Android, at least in the U.S., are turning out to be the most popular. You know, some of the, you know, the devices that we have to take into account on a daily basis are definitely the higher resolution, you know, Apple smartphones. Also, you know, Samsung's Galaxy range is fantastic. You know, the Google Nexus, you know, phones are also excellent. So I feel like the crowd has narrowed a bit. There is some fragmentation in each one of these device operating systems. Different companies have sort of, particularly for Android, have sort of tweaked the operating system in certain ways, added in things or customized it to be specific to that manufacturer. And so it's important to understand when designing for Android in particular, when something you're looking at is actually part of the operating system, a standard part of the operating system, or something that was added in by the manufacturer.
Let's take a break here, Doug. When we come back, we'll move from smartphones to the regular screen that most people are familiar with, and we'll talk about responsive design and maybe compare that with what you call native apps or just regular old apps. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. In the studio this morning, we have Doug Brashear, Associate Director of User Experience at HZDG. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. In the studio this morning is Doug Brashear. He is the Associate Director of User Experience at a local company called HZDG. For more information, you can go to hzdg.com. It's an advertising agency, and you go to their site, and they do everything. They do all kinds of stuff. And one area of expertise that Doug has is with what they call user experience or user interface. And in my world, there's all kinds of acronyms that describe that. But it's essentially, if you pick up your phone, go to a website, what's it look like? If you visit that same website on a desktop, what's it look like? And that's, I think, the transition for this block is, okay, so, okay, we made it to work. We go to Starbucks, we turn on our laptop, and we try and see what's going on. Now, we can have websites that are designed in a responsive manner, or we can have apps. Tell us some positive and negatives of both of these, Doug.
So I think, one of the biggest things, one of the biggest differentiators is, you know, what type of relationship does this person or this user already have with your organization? If they're totally new to your organization, you know, they're probably going to be coming through the browser. They're probably not going to have gone to the app store and done research to try to find an offering that you have just to experiment with it to see if it contains the information that they need. So they're probably going to hit you through the browser. So in that case, that's definitely one situation where a responsively designed website would be really important. You know, whether they're on their desktop, whether they're on a tablet, their smartphone, you know, they can open up a browser, go to your web URL, and see an experience that's optimized for the size of the screen. Also, there are varying levels of complexity with responsive design. You know, the lowest level of complexity is basically just making it look good on different size screens. The highest level of complexity is where you're actually layering in a lot of content specific to that screen size. So you might have content that appears on your desktop version, but not in your mobile version. And then you have very mobile specific content that appears in your mobile version, but not in your desktop version.
I mean, it's almost, it's very trendy. I mean, Todd Park just had his Datapalooza, and they talked about apps for medical applications, apps for this, apps that. Well, maybe there may be one of my listeners that an app is not the correct answer to their problem, or maybe an app is the correct answer to the problem. I personally think there's some apps out there, let's say in the medical world, where, you know, a form may be too long and complicated that may be best on responsive design for a desktop. So it's not one tool fits all, is it?
No. And the funny thing is, I feel like one of the things we find ourselves doing a lot is backing clients off the ledge when they come to us and they say, I want an app. And so what we have to do is kind of back them up and say, well, tell us why you think you need an app, or what are you seeing that makes you think you need one? Or let's talk about your goals and your challenges and what you're trying to overcome and what you're trying to feed here. And let us help you determine what's the best way to meet that need. I think that, you know, all too often people want to jump straight to an app because it's the glamorous thing. It's the thing that people are talking about. You know, when you talk about the fact that your company has an app, you know, it lends an air of credibility. But what we find is that a lot of companies start thinking about an app before they've thought about how to best make their current digital experience render on different size screens. So, you know, it's important to start with the thing that people are going to use the most before you go straight to an app.
I'm staring right at your title here, user experience. Well, that's what you do, Doug. I mean, you would go out to an organization, sit down there and say, okay, let's put our foot up on the table. And okay, now what's the end experience? What does your customer want? You know, if it's a physician and he's in a lab and he's filling out a very detailed report with some complicated terminology, you may want to look at responsive design. If it's a a short 2 or 3 point survey, maybe it's best with a handheld device. And it's not the technology; it's understanding the users.
Yep, it is a really important thing. I mean, you know, sometimes we'll go to a client and they'll say, well, let's have you talk to some of our internal folks and they can help you understand what the user needs. And we'll say to them, well, whereas that can be useful, that is basically you telling us what you think the user needs. Really, what we want to do is we want to talk directly to users. And there's a lot of different ways of doing that. Some are higher level of effort, some are lower level of effort. And certain types of tactics deliver certain types of results. So you have to know what you're shooting for, the type of results that you want, and then determine your sort of user research tactics based on that. You know, online surveys, online prototyping are great ways of doing testing with remote audiences. If you happen to be in the same room with someone, you can have them go through a prototype that you've put together and ask them questions one-on-one. You could have a focus group. One of my colleagues just did a really great card sorting exercise with a local business bank client a few days ago, and it was fantastic. I mean, it was the client was very engaged. They knew their work very well, their products and services, and so that was a fantastically useful and engaging exercise. So, you know, sometimes you get great input from the clients, sometimes you get great input from the users, but what's most important is to get as much input as you can.
So is that what the Adobe Edge Inspect product is? Is that what that does?
No, some of the tools that we've used in the past are, you know, I've used Moray. Moray is sort of a user testing platform that you install on a laptop, and it gives you sort of a mobile user experience or mobile usability testing lab that you can take to places instead of having to go to a place that has a very dedicated facility. We've used usertesting.com. One thing that they have an enterprise level license that is great for kind of screening for particular types of users. For a particular client, we use that screener to really hone in on a certain type of user and a certain mindset, and that helped us get some really great targeted feedback. There are other types of things you can do, and in some cases, you can use these tools in conjunction with each other. So there are online, for example, card sorting tools. And if you combine an online card sorting tool with a platform like user testing, you can actually get people card sorting in real time or on video and talking about why they're card sorting in a certain way. You don't have to be in the same room with them, but you get great results.
I'm asking a silly question, then a serious question. So I'll ask a silly question. So let's say I own a company called Toner Tuners, and I've got this fantastic website, and I want to go to responsive design. So would your counsel to me go, John, let's do graceful degradation and we'll kind of, or wipe it out, start from scratch seems like the best way. It seems to me that you got to start from scratch. I you know, this whole twisting and turning and redesigning things, what's the advice?
I think you do probably. It of course depends on what starting from scratch means, you know, how much investment is involved. I think there's sort of a pro-con analysis you want to do up front, you know, and you want to have the technical people who are going to be doing the work in front of, you know, in that conversation, because they're going to be the ones to best indicate the level of effort involved. But sometimes, you know, there are rare occasions where adding the mobile optimized view is actually not that big of a deal. We actually had at a prior company, we had a client just over in Falls Church who wanted to add a smartphone touch point to their web experience. And it actually came down to being as easy as just creating a new style sheet and adding some new CSS classes in their web server output. But oftentimes it is actually much better to consider the devices you want to optimize for at the same time you're building your desktop site. And in some cases, there are some really great templates out there. And in some cases, for particular types of platforms like WordPress.
I'm thinking WordPress has got great responsive templates. Yep. Just select a template, bang.
You
done.
Do, and you have a lot of people, because it's so popular, you have a lot of people out there creating responsive templates for it. You know, a lot of the open source and even, you know, commercial CMSs have this mobile optimization capability built in. You know, Adobe's product actually has the ability to create the individual device views individually. So you have a much higher level of control over what people see on any device. That's Adobe CQ. And so there really are a ton of options. For your particular case, you know, for a smaller website, I think, you know, just developing it using one of these responsively designed templates could be really valuable. Or in some cases for small websites, some of the easy website creation tools actually have some of this this built in. Like I believe Squarespace has it built in. You know, so there's great offerings out there. If you're a small, you know, single person shop or, you know, couple person shop, there's great tools out there. If you're a, you know, 100,000 person corporation.
My serious question involves speed. World Cup's going on right now. There are a lot of really fast players on the field I'm watching. And when most people pick up the phone and go to a website, they want it to be easy to read, but they want it fast as well. Mm-hmm. And so let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about speed and responsive design and see if it's one or the other, or maybe you can combine and get them both. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio today is Doug Brashear, Associate Director, User Experience at HZDG. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Doug Brashear, Associate Director of User Experience at an ad agency called HZDG. If you want to see a real creative website, go to hzdg.com, and you'll see everything imaginable there, won't you? See this guy with his big afro and these blue sunglasses. You'll see this, you'll see that, and it really is a creative place to work, isn't it?
Oh, my gosh. Not only do we have fantastic creative people on the print side, on the digital side, but I think more than any place I've worked before, there's nonstop collaboration with these folks. Like the guy I interact with on a daily basis, he sits right behind me. We have a running conversation about everything and projects, you know, throughout the day. You know, basically just, you know, both of us kind of help, you know, trying to push stuff forward, you know, all throughout the day. But it's a great collaborative place to be. Definitely enjoy working there.
A lot of my listeners get information from blogs. I have a blog called Tech Tuesday Blog. Do you have a blog, Doug, or do your company have a blog, or is there one you can recommend for our listeners to read?
You know, I feel like, you know, the blogs that I read the most are, you know, those that involve, you know, mobile technology, you know, and whether it's a blog or whether it's an email blast, you know, there's a ton of great information streams to subscribe to. eMarketer has a great one. The Mobile Marketing Association has a great one. You know, there's a bunch from Fierce, like Fierce Wireless or Fierce Mobile.
Is there a guru nationally known for this? I don't know anyone in the mobile marketplace that really distinguishes themselves. I mean, I know in content marketing there is, and I just don't know anyone. There's no one. There's so much going on out there on how you can distinguish yourself. You know?
I think what's interesting is that mobile's now been around for so long that the gurus are sort of, you know, they've established niches for themselves. So there are people to look to for on the technology side or on the hardware side. You know, there are people to look to on the user experience side. I mean, one guy who I think is a great speaker, if you ever want to get someone into your organization, you know, just to give a great download about mobile user experience design, it's a guy named Steve Huber, Hoover.
Yeah.
He's a super funny guy, has a great presentation, you know, very knowledgeable and very sort of assistive or collaborative. I mean, you know, the type of person who, you know, would work with you to determine, you know, what you need, what your organization needed to learn, and then put together a great presentation for it.
It's a good person to know. Before the break, we talked about speed and, you know, people want both. You know, it's fast and it's food, fast food, and you can have a speedy. I want it responsive and I want it fast. And study after study shows that, you know, not that many for big companies. I read a survey this morning from a company called Rest of LLC, and they said, well, you know, only about 36% of companies out there have responsive design websites. And these may be subfolders and subdomains and domain names. And guess what? You may take a hit for speed with some of these responsive designs. And I go, no, wait a minute. I want it responsive, but well, I want it fast too. So I, you know, what do I go with? A dedicated mobile site for speed? Do I go with responsive for speed or the desktop for speed? These are questions that people want to know.
I think, you know, the idea of the dedicated mobile site is a good one to cover because, you know, I think it's the easy option that a lot of companies consider. And in a small number of cases, I think it is a good option, you know, where especially when the mobile web experience needs to be really different than the desktop web experience, when you don't want your mobile experience in any way held back by, you know, the structure, the hierarchy or the technology or the design of the desktop experience. when you want to do something completely different, you want to facilitate a more streamlined path, you want to leverage, you know, greater capabilities of the device, you know, probably going with a mobile specific experience is an option to consider. Because if you tried to do that with responsive, you'd actually arrive at a pretty complex set of website code, trying to cater to individual device breakpoints and in very specific ways. The one thing to keep in mind about a responsively designed website is you want to be very careful about how you code it. You don't want to be pushing to small devices, you know, really huge image files that they're just never going to be able to, you know, get the most out of. You know, those image files or those video files will take a lot longer to download. And in some cases, you know, files like that, depending on your responsive design, may never even be displayed to the user. So you may end up pushing content to people that takes time to download, uses their bandwidth, and never even gets displayed to them.
I was at Federal Computer Week this morning and reading an article called Three Steps for Developing a Winning Mobile Strategy, dedicated to federal information technology professionals. I mean, you know, you go to Chicago and walk into a donut shop, they're going to be thinking about it. The big companies are going to be thinking about it. And my listeners are going to be thinking about it, too. It's just it overwhelms us. And people are scratching their heads and thinking, I know what I'm thinking. I'm looking at you going user experience and saying, well, Doug, where does a touchscreen fit in all this? Mm-hmm. I mean, is this just an outlier or where does a touchscreen fit in?
No, it's interesting because I think that, you know, several years ago, people would have said, oh, touchscreen, it's just limited to smartphones. And then tablets came out and people are like, OK, now we have to consider touchscreen interactions on larger devices. And I think very soon we're going to start to see, a wider adoption of touchscreen technology in the external display and laptop and desktop markets. I mean, I think that we're already starting to see laptops that have touch screens. I think it would be very surprising if we didn't see that in upcoming generations of, you know, Mac hardware. I think that, you know, one of the things that we're constantly striving to do is to make experiences that, you know, look great on a desktop website when someone's using a mouse, but also work great on a tablet device when someone's, you know, touching and pointing. And that means, you know, having touch targets, you know, actions or buttons or what have you that are appropriately sized, you know, not relying as much on hyperlinks where, you know, you've got this very small touch target, but something with a bigger, more defined area. There's this idea in user experience called affordance. Affordance is basically the extent to which something looks tappable and that you're able to determine ahead of time what that might do, that you have a reasonable assumption of what it might do. You definitely want to have high affordance in any interface you're designing. So I think that there are some things that particular to touch interfaces that every project needs to take into account.
You know, when you said the word tappable, I thought about my years in college where the only thing that was tappable was a keg.
Exactly.
Tappable. You know, they didn't use that word 5 years ago.
No. Nope,
tappable. It's just kind of a whole fascinating. If you go to my Twitter feed, at Ray Gilray, you'll see a picture of me in these Oculus Rift glasses. Kind of cool. And people are talking about wearable devices.
Mm-hmm.
And wearables got something to do with handheld device and mobile design, too. I mean, this is, okay, Doug, you don't have 80 hours. Now we're going to dump this whole other concept of wearable devices on you. Now what? I mean, this throws everything into confusion, doesn't it?
I think it's so interesting. I have this personal interest in wearable technology. I mean, I think that's one of the reasons why I was so enamored with mobile devices when they first started to come out, just because it was this computer that you basically had with you all the time. And I think one thing that's really interesting is, you know, to me, what really changed the impression of mobile devices in kind of the general marketplace was the idea of this multi-touch screen, you know, being able to interact with the data in a more intuitive way on the screen. You know, nobody had to use styluses anymore or styly anymore. And I think now,
Style, a good name for a company, by the way.
Exactly. So I think now the next leap we're about to make is making these interactions more natural, and that is taking away the need to pull this device out of your pocket and stare at the screen. I feel like, you know, what I can't wait to see are, you know, optics where information is just kind of layered in front of you, kind of that, you know, if you remember the movie Stranger Than Fiction, you know, that sort of persistent data awareness that's in front of you, you know, ideally only when you want it. But I love that idea that, you know, your understanding of what's around you could be enhanced by the availability of data that just appears in front of you.
One of the people I follow on Twitter is Dr. Allison Druin from the University of Maryland, and she's in charge of the Human-Computer Interaction Lab. And that's what they do. Mm-hmm. They, okay, now what about this type of device? What about a touchscreen? And they examine and take a look from so many different angles. And just put yourself back maybe in 10 years and go, well, 10 years ago they didn't have any people just worrying about mm-hmm. computer interface and design, but it's a whole world now.
I think it's a really big I think it's important, or it's a really big factor as well, particularly for augmented reality or sort of these wearable devices, because like me, a lot of people out there, think that it would be great to have this. And then there's a whole other set of professionals that, sociologists and anthropologists and such, who, have to think about the societal ramifications of having, data appear in front of my eyes while I'm driving or something like that. So, I think what has been fascinating for me is to, understand, all of these potential limiting factors or negatives, around sort of data pervasiveness, privacy and security and distractions and things like that. So there's definitely a lot to keep in mind.
Let's take a break and come back, talk more about UI UX. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio is Doug Beshear, Associate Director for User Experience at HZDG. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio this morning is Doug Beshear, Associate Director of User Experience at HZDG. Whenever I think of user experience, I think of the guy at the Walmart you walk in. So do you greet people as they walk in the door? Some people might go, user experience, he must be the greeter at the door? Doug, tell us what do you mean by user experience?
So basically, user experience is this idea of, and it can involve a lot of different things at a lot of different places. In my experience, what it is, getting into a project and helping to identify, what are the goals, what are the needs of the user, what are their constraints and limitations, is accessibility involved, is Section 508 involved, are they going to be using, devices more, the desktop more, or an even spread, what's the best way to communicate with this audience? There's a lot of content strategy involved. It's a lot of requirements identification up front, and then kind of a progressive visualization of an interface for them. We oftentimes start with flow diagrams or experience maps, where we're kind of identifying a structure of content or an interaction. Then we start to visualize the actual interfaces that people will use. We might do that with static pictures or interactive prototypes. And then, with a prototype, you can do all sorts of testing to validate your ideas and such.
And the website is hzdg.com.
Exactly.
It's not very radio friendly.
It's not radio friendly.
HZ, it sounds better in Spanish, but it's, hzdg.com. But an interesting site. If you're used to going to federal sites, if you go to this one, you'll get your mind blown, man. It's like, whoa, where's it leading me? They have these pictures, just their first names, and they tell the little story and they move on, and mm-hmm. It's very interactive. Many of my listeners are on Twitter. I said earlier, at Ray Gilray, please follow me. Does your company have a Twitter handle? Do you have a Twitter handle, Doug?
I do have a Twitter handle, but I haven't been using it all that much lately. I have to say I've been really busy. It's Diesel Doug, DieselDug.
I like that. And what's your company, at HZDG, is that correct?
I believe so.
Yeah. I don't know how active they are on Twitter. Everyone has a different amount of activity on social media, and it's always hard to figure out what kind of personal choices or corporate choices people make. But I have designed a scientific 10-question test that will determine whether or not, Doug, you are a card-carrying nerd. And if you're a card-carrying nerd, I'll tell you, you're in really big trouble. But what I'll do is ask these questions, because people are listening going, seems to know a lot about mobile, but he's a director of user experience. Well, is he a nerd or not? So we'll find out here. So I'm asking these 10 questions, Doug. First question. So break into your house tonight. How many old school desktops do we see sitting around your house?
Oh, gosh. There would definitely be one.
That's the wrong answer. That's the wrong answer, my friend.
What about laptops? Do they count too?
No, it's desktops. So,
I have a stack of old phones.
Everyone does, I think. Speaking of phones, question two. How many cell phones have you purchased for yourself in the last year?
For myself, probably just one.
Just one. Ooh, not compulsive about this.
No.
So you're trending towards normal.
I only want to carry one.
And do you have a personal Twitter feed? I think you do, don't you?
Yes.
Do you have a personal blog?
I do not.
You're trending towards normal. You're trending towards normal.
Nobody has ever said that about me.
What kind of smartphone do you have?
I have an iPhone 5S.
Okay. And what's the most popular app you used in the last 30 days?
You know, I'm a big eBay fan. I do a lot of eBay.
For parts or what do you buy?
For a lot of parts.
Wow, wow, wow. And we break into your house this afternoon. How many tablet devices are floating around your house?
There's probably about four.
Four? Well, that's a good number.
I'm getting better, right?
And social networking sites, anyone you're active in?
You know, Facebook, Twitter, you know, LinkedIn, Quora.
A bunch of them, huh?
A few.
And how many LinkedIn groups do you participate or members of?
Oh, I think maybe five or 10.
Okay. Last question. Last book you read, was it electronic or paper?
I think electronic.
Electronic. Well, I think you might have pulled this out. You're kind of in the middle of not trending towards a nerd at all, Doug. This is surprising. You're trending normal, which I don't know if that's going to get you in trouble or not, you know? during the break, we were talking about my listeners, Govies, and we're talking about browsers. And I said, well, geez, what about browser support? And you said, you know, that might be important for my federal listeners, you know? And I think, and maybe for federal listeners, if you're trying to design a responsive site or trying to understand your people who subscribe to your newsletter or who get your alerts, maybe you better know what browser they use, huh?
I think there's a lot of interesting factors that are specific to the federal audience. I mean, I think it's easy for a lot of design agencies to overlook the need within the federal community to, you know, still cater to browsers that other people might want to just kind of discount as old. Certain versions of IE, for example, you know, we know are still, you know, widely used in government agencies. So, you know, because of standardized device profiles and things like that, or device imaging. So, you know, we absolutely know that that's important. I think, you know, you have to find the right agency that knows about Section 508 or W3C, WCAG conformance and what level is necessary and what set of implementation guidelines to follow to meet the needs of the legislation. I definitely think that, you know, these are all things that, you know, a competent design agency is going to know about. You won't have to tell them. They'll be asking you about them, whether you tell them or not. So, you know, browser testing is still absolutely important. You know, there's a lot of browsers out there now, you know, obviously Chrome, obviously Firefox, Safari, IE. Browser testing takes time, especially on mobile devices too. I've been on projects where I was helping with QA and had seven different devices in front of me and executing each step of the test, you know, on every device at the same time and such. It's definitely a daunting but very valuable task.
Very methodical there. There are software developers talking about frameworks all the time. Framework for this, framework for that. I imagine there are frameworks for mobile design. I've heard things like Bootstrap and Goldilocks and Foundation. Are these something worth considering, or are these too esoteric for the listeners?
No, well, I think it's important because, you know, these are frameworks that give you some things right out of the box, and that's important. You know, the responsive behavior right out of the box is going to be, you know, supported by these major frameworks. And the reason why that's valuable is that, you know, you don't have to worry about defining it yourself. You don't have to worry about developing it yourself. You know, where it comes into play on the user experience side is you have to ensure that the user experience you design takes these things into account. You know, any good user experience effort is going to, you know, take into account, you know, technical limitations, you know, the capabilities of the framework that you're using, you know, the system dependencies, you know, what data you have available, what business logic you have available already. You know, you definitely don't want to recreate the wheel every time. So centralization of business logic and portability of data is really great if you have that. I think, you know, another big factor, particularly for mobile deployments, is that, you know, you have to have availability of the data. You know, I feel like, you know, several clients, you know, we've talked to, you know, you want to do something mobile for them, you want to do an app for them, but, you know, the technical infrastructure just isn't ready to support that, you know, with APIs and web services and things like that. So it's, if you want to do these things, if your organization wants to do these things, it's important to try to, you know, fast track some of those efforts. So, you know, you have that stuff available when the mobile effort gets going.
So I get to use a new acronym here. It's called RESS, Responsive Web Design with Server-Side Components. And this is an important part of responsive design is oh, yes, we're going to pull this up, and is it there? I mean, mm-hmm. what database are you pulling from? And for my listeners, is it secure, and what kind of security requirements do I have to have, and do they comply with the 508 compliance? It's to be one layer on top of another.
Yep. Yeah, you know, security for mobile, I think, has been really in the news lately, you know, particularly when some of the surveys of the Google Play catalog of apps, you know, yielded that, you know, up to 40% of the apps in the Google Play Store have some level of security leak or, you know, lack of encryption, you know, blatant malware just built in. You know, they're doing a bit to try to control that. But, you know, this is one of the ramifications of the more streamlined or previously non-existent review process, you know, for Google Play apps. So definitely, you know, be careful with the apps that you're using and, you know, definitely, you know, try to read up if you can, if you're interested in it, in terms of how different organizations treat your data.
So what's next step? Is it going to be everyone wearing Google Glass? Is it wearable devices everywhere? New type earbuds? Where's it heading?
So I think it's really interesting. I think we'll see Google continuing to push and refine Google Glass. I mean, I think it's really interesting. It's at a certain price point that I think keeps it out of the hands of a lot of people. But I think that was probably purposeful. And I think that you'll start to see more consumer level devices.
Hmm, interesting. I'd like to thank my guest, Doug Brashear. He's the Associate Director of User Experience at HZDG. And you are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Lectromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, Tuesday mornings at 9, only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.